It's tempting to do things for maximum profit, but if you always know in your heart that you're doing the right thing by your customers, by the people that you work with, by your family, by everybody, then you most likely are.
Welcome to Million Dollar Flip Flops, the podcast that invites you on a transformative journey to unlock the secrets of living life to the fullest. In this podcast, we dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, game changers, and business builders from around the world. If you're a business owner feeling trapped, overwhelmed, and longing for the time freedom you once dreamt of, this podcast is your beacon of hope. Buckle up, because here we go.
Let me ask you this, and I've known you a long time, and I don't know that I've ever asked you this question, which surprises me as the words are coming out of my mouth. But you know, tell people just real quick kind of what you do. But more importantly, you know, you're in a unique kind of four-person, all-family business, which there's two questions I have around that. So it's a three-question answer total. It's what do you do? Who is Ken? And then it is, how did all four people align at the same time, or did they? And then really, how have you made that work over the years? Because, you know, Ramsey always says that the only ship that doesn't float is a partnership.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things that go into that answer. I'm a builder. I think I was built to be a builder, just because of the sheer joy that I get out of seeing, you know, starting something and completing it. It just works with my psyche. And I guess we're coming up on 25 years. So 1998, I just couldn't find anything that I really got excited about. My son had just been born. I spent several months at home taking care of him. And while Ellen was just making great money back in the day of telecom, 25 cents a minute for long distance. And then these guys came along and took all that away. So it was a dying industry anyway. But at the time, she was doing very well. She's a great salesperson. And I wish I had what she had at the time, but I stayed at home. I took care of Jack, and then that didn't really fulfill me. And so I said, well, you know, we've got a lot that came with our house that we bought right next door. I think I'm going to build a house there. You know, I said, real estate's a great thing. We should try real estate, you know, and I loved the house that we bought. I was doing all kinds of handiwork on it. I had been in the business of selling tools and the equipment and things like that. So I kind of had, you know, a lot of people that I've been around that were in that kind of work, and it kind of looked like something I could do. And so I built my first house, didn't know anything about it. I went to the local community college, got my, took a class that taught me how to pass the GC test. So I got my general contractor's license. I learned how to borrow money from this insane guy who turned out to be a mortgage broker who lost everything in 2008. But at the time, he was teaching me all these great things. And I latched onto him, borrowed money from him several times. But anyway, I built my first house. I enjoyed it so much. We moved in and we're like, holy cow, I can't believe we're living in a new house that we built and it's not falling down around us. And it costs this much. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I had an appraisal on this when I transferred over to my mortgage, and it was worth this much. I'm like, wow.
Light bulb moment.
Yeah. So boom, that was the first light bulb. So that's how that I kind of got into that. And so over the next 6 months or so, I was talking to Ellen about starting a business and doing this for a living, and you could stay at home. And I'm always a big idea guy. I'm like always out there pitching the big idea. And she was like, yeah, whatever. I want to quit my job. I'd love to stay at home. And so that would be great. And I said, but I really would like a partner in this. And she said, well, call my brother. He hates his job. He's down in Atlanta. And he was going through the same thing I was. He was just miserable. He was working a dead-end job, sitting in a cubicle all day. So he comes up to Charlotte. He sits in my brand new kitchen. And I remember I'm up on the countertop and I'm talking to him. And I'm like, yeah. I didn't know PowerPoint at the time, but I'm up there. I've got pictures. I've got surveys. I've got all this. This is what I want to do. And I'd love to have you as a partner. And he just listened to the whole thing. And I'm thinking he's into it. Cause I mean, you know, Rod, yeah. Rod's just smiling and doing like this. And we get to the end of it. He looks at me and he goes, I don't think so. I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And he just couldn't, his wife was making great money at the time. They're living in Atlanta And he just couldn't at the time get his head around it.
So you had to convince him to come along.
Well, I tried. You know, we talked, and but Rod makes up his mind. You think that's it. So he leaves, and I'm thinking in the back of my head, you'll be sorry, or you'll be back, or whatever. Well, lo and behold, 2 hours later, he's knocking on my front door, and I open the door, and he goes, let's do it.
I love it.
All the way back to Spartanburg. So halfway back, talked to his wife on the phone. I think he stopped at a payphone and talked for 30 minutes and said, I think we can do this. And Kathy was just like, well, if it makes you happy, let's do it. So he came back and said, let's do it. And that's when Bannister Home started. I mean, we got incorporated 6 months later. And I think that was June of 1999. So we're coming up 25th anniversary.
25 years, buddy. That is nuts.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, I'd be curious probably more than anything is what the family dynamic, you know, working with.
That's the best part.
Nicole and I have our own episode, right, that we do every third episode on this show. And that's always what people want to know. You know, how do you work with your wife? And in your case, it's compounded. You work with your wife, your brother-in-law, and his wife.
Yeah. Well, I look at it this way. I've always, when I do something, I feel like if I feel good about it, it's 100%. And this was 100% from the moment Rod knocked on my door coming back, that he and I are going to be great partners. I mean, I knew Rod at the time for maybe 3 years, and I knew what a great guy he was, and that, you know, we could make this work, and I'd love to get him to Charlotte anyway. And so I knew Rod was the right fit from the start. It took a while for us to wean ourselves off the salaries that the women were earning, but we eventually did. And we got to the point to where there was probably a couple years between, I don't know, 2000 and 2002, where they were still working their jobs and making, you know, our cash flow. And Rod and I were figuring things out. We made a few mistakes. We built a house and lost money on it, but we learned, you know, so much from that experience. And slowly but surely, we started making profits on some of the things that we were doing. And we stood by everything we did. I think that really made us stand out. We were not, you know, we'll do the job for this much, and if we lose money, well, we just learned from it. But, you know, we didn't screw people. And then I think in 2003, we bought a piece of land, talked to my crazy financer, and he hooked us up with a good loan, and we built our first spec house. And we sold it, I think, for $700,000, which was just absolutely insane. Now, that house would probably sell for $2 million now in Charlotte. Yeah. But I just remember when I got the offer and we were sharing it around, I called my mother and I said, we sold a house for $700,000. I said, can you believe that? And she couldn't at all. She couldn't believe a house would cost that much. But that was when things started turning to where we started making some decent money, and where I could say to Ellen, you know, just quit what you're doing.
How long of a timeline was that from 2 years?
Yeah. So about 2002 was, when this kind of started. And I think about 2003, 2004, Ellen came over, and then, or Ellen quit her job. And she started just slowly doing some things here and there with design. She's got a great eye for design. She's not a trained designer, but she definitely has the knack, and she knows how to manage a project from a design standpoint. And that's very important to us. So she's our design coordinator. It's not necessarily a designer, but she helps people figure things out. And then Kathy came along, and Kathy, right from the start, you know, she just said, well, I'm going to be the salesperson, and I'm going to do the contracts. They're like, deal. So everybody just fell into their place. I started taking care of the books just because I'm kind of anal and retentive about that. But there was no discussion about, you're going to do this and you're going to do that, and I'm going to be the president, I'm going to tell you what to do. It was just kind of evolved, which is great.
So what's the biggest challenge you've overcome? Because, I mean, clearly you've made it work. You don't go 25 years without saying it works, right? And I think people wish they were in your shoes. So give me the low spot.
just to get to the family part, was you're all in. I mean, if the business fails, the marriage could go with it, you know? And if the marriage fails, I'm not going to be able to run the company, or she's not going to work for us. It's going to be very awkward. So there's it's not an incentive. It's a demand that we have to get along. And I mean, we've yelled at each other. We've cried in meetings. We've been through a lot of things. We've gotten counseling as a group, but at the end of the day, it's just, you got to do it. There's no alternative. So I don't know. I think more people should probably look at things that way. There's a lot of people, I think, that jump into things and are like, I haven't done work out, you know, with marriages or whatever. And I think that, you know, Ellen and I took that, we take our vows seriously. And I know Rod and Kathy do too. And the vow transfers into our business because it couldn't work any other way. And I don't want to do anything but this. And I don't want to do it with anyone but them.
Hey, gang. I hope you're enjoying today's episode. Normally, this is where you'd be asked to buy something or go download some lead magnet. Not here. You may or may not know that we are on a mission to change 1 million entrepreneurs' lives with this podcast, the book, the journal, and more. And through our foundation, we want to send 1 million kids on life-changing trips. After all, 100% of our profits are donated from everything we do. Here is where you come in. If you're enjoying today's episode, and I hope you are, it likely made you think of someone who needs to hear it. Pause me right now, I'll wait, and share the episode with them. It's the only way we can impact as many business owners as possible, and you never know whose life you could change. Now back to the show. You know what comes to mind for me is when you hear of a business and they say, you know, well, we treat our employees like family. And it's like, I mean, you have to, because they are your family. Yeah. And if that wasn't lip service, if people really did treat the people they work with like they're their wife or like they're their brother-in-law, how different things would work out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the real deal here. And the thing, I think something you said in your podcast was, when do you turn it off? When you turn off the business? And for us, we enjoy it so much that we just talk about it all the time. Nobody ever says, let's stop talking about business, because everybody loves talking about it because it's fun. I mean, you were in the business.
Oh yeah.
When you're doing well and things are going good, you talk about it. And when things are going bad, you want to vent about it. And the best people to talk about are people that understand. I don't know if that's weird or not, but that's just how it works for us.
I don't think it's weird. I think probably the difference just in that one example would be, you know, Nicole supports me, you know, 1,000%, but she doesn't want to talk about coaching all day or the different, you know, it's just not her thing, you right. know? So, I mean, and I guess I shouldn't say it's not her thing. It's different for her, right? Where if we were both like my friends, Ted and Elizabeth, I'm sure they'll probably listen to this show. You know, Ted and I went to Brown. We were in the same cohort, and Elizabeth, I think, was one cohort before. So they never stopped talking about coaching and all the things that go around it because they're both in the same thing. Right. So I think it's neat. That's probably, if you really dissected it, a lot of the reason you all have worked as well as you have, because everyone's on the same bus in the right seat moving forward. Right. Like you're the classic example of what that should look like.
Well, I don't know, you know, if I ever wrote a book, it'd be 2 pages and, you know, just have the things that we're talking about. And, you know, I don't know if it's selling or not, but I can tell you very quickly that, you know, you commit 100% to what you're doing and who you're doing it with. And you can't fail from that standpoint. I mean, you can fail in building, you could fail in making money, but you can't fail as far as keeping yourself happy working with the family. Yeah. I don't think I've heard you say this several times in your other things. It's not for everyone. And it's not. It has to be exciting to you. And that's really what excites me is just, we have our Monday and our Thursday meeting. I love getting together with them because we start talking about new stuff. You know, there's a certain part of the meeting where, you know, that's just new thing I'm working on right here. It's going to be our next townhouse that we're going to build. I can't wait to talk on Thursday about it because I got some exciting things that I've been working on. And I know they'll come up with some cool things. Now there's, you know, other times when they're, you know, we're just going at it. But for the most part, I cannot wait to get together and talk about the future with them.
Have you ever wished you were doing something else?
When I was younger, I want to tell my kids. I don't think they're ready to hear it. But especially my son, I want to tell them, don't compare yourself with other people that you think are doing great. I did that for a long time. I thought when I worked for a company called Vermont American, and I was in outside sales, I was in retail, and I liked it. It was a great job. But my buddy Charlie Brown, he moved up to national sales. And I'm like, wow, that's where I need to be. National sales, calling on Home Depot and Lowe's and all this. And those transfer into these big jobs down the road. Well, it just sounded like a big party. sound like they're just having fun. You know, those guys are kind of a small team. And I thought that I was going there. Well, they didn't take me there. And I was stuck in retail. And it took a lot of hindsight to go back to that and say, you know what? I'm sure his life wasn't great. You know, he had his own problems with that, just like I had problems with what I was doing. So I really, really, really tried not to compare myself to someone else and say, I want to be in their shoes, because you don't know where their shoes are going or where they've been. So that was a big kind of realization to me in my later 20s. I had a lot of jobs, you know, I bounced around, but I just wasn't happy until I started working for myself. But while I was figuring that out, it was just all the things that I wanted that drove me in certain directions were all for the wrong reasons. So that's why I was so happy when I finally like, you know, you just need to work for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the deep dive I do with people all over the world every day. It's why I love my job so much is, you know, I love building too. Yeah. But I learned a lot. And I think what I hear is that you did a lot of soul searching and learned a lot about yourself in all of those other jobs that allowed you to move into this role and say, I'm happy here. And I think a lot of people don't have that experience, and they're constantly, you know, we talk about the five phases. It's the next episode or the one that came out today, but, you know, we get to that anxious philosopher where it's like, okay, I'm selling some stuff. It's great. And everybody thinks I'm great, but is this all there is? And then you go back to the shiny thing again. And I see people just repeat that loop forever. And then they die, you know, and they never really asked what makes you happy, you know? And I feel, does that sound right? Did you kind of do that work?
Absolutely. And you don't really know when you're happy. You definitely know when you're not. But happiness is a hindsight thing in a lot of ways. I think you look back on things and like, I was really happy then, you know, regardless of how much money I had. I was a lifeguard down in Myrtle Beach when I was 20. I had no money. It was the happiest time of my life. I mean, I had a job, but I didn't have enough money to do a lot of things. But I was so happy. But I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
You're like, God, I need to make more money. I wish you could. It's hard to impart that to young people. And the other thing I try to say to my kids is, you know, you got to make a lot of mistakes. I'm here to tell you of all the mistakes that I've made. If you want to hear about them,
right. You can talk about
them. And if that helps you, you know, with your path, I'd love to talk to you about it, but.
And they're not listening to a word you have to say. No, they're not. No. You know, I always say the older I get, the smarter my dad becomes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like you look back, you're like, yeah, whatever, guy. You know, and it's like, damn, he was right again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I told you some of the sayings my dad said. You put it in the book. It was brilliant. You know, he was a smart man. And I like the one thing he said in his later years. I'm like, man, where'd you pull that one out of? And he said, there's always one more asshole in this world that you gave it credit for. When I was just pissed off at somebody, I'm like, God almighty, dad, we're gonna write that down somewhere. And he was a smart guy.
Love it. You know, I was thinking about Jack the other day, and what you just said brought it up. Jack's your son, by the way. I think we got that across. But you know, you compare yourself to other people. And what you just said about you need to go out there and fail a lot, what we see is the end result, because people never post the 1,000 times they fail. You know how many businesses I've started that went nowhere?
Yeah.
All kinds of them. But we don't talk about those. We talk about the construction company. We talk about the real estate company. Well, you and I have, you know, and certainly I talk about it more in the book and more here. But, you know, we compare ourselves with the guy that's on roll 1,000 of the dice, you know, and you're on roll 10. And you're wondering why you're not doing so good.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
And I say make mistakes. I don't mean go out and, you know, crash your car or do all, you know, anything that's going to hurt you. I mean, make valuable mistakes that don't cost anything. You know, you may have hurt feelings, but you're going to be wiser when you come out of it. And again, whenever I've said that, it's always the wrong timing with my son, but I think eventually he'll remember those things. Just like I remember a lot of the things my dad said at the time. I'm like, shut up, dad.
Yeah. Right. Right. So let me ask you this. If you know, I typically work with that person who they wake up every day. They have all the Western signs of success, but yet they feel isolated because they can't talk to anyone about their quote unquote first world problems, you know, because they're making money. They've got the SUV, they've got their new house that they just built. They've got all those things. So what do you have to complain about? You know, so how does that person get unstuck? And have you ever been, it doesn't sound like it, at least not since you started the company, but have you ever been in that position?
No, not really. Cause, Ellen and I were talking the other day about, you know, the first day you realize you had money, and I'm just always chasing it, chasing the dollar as hard as I can. And I don't spend any of it. So it's just been recently that I'm like, yeah, we're doing all right. And everybody says that if you have money, you know, you're going to be unhappy. I don't think you're going to, I look at money as comfort. I just want to be comfortable. I just want to make sure that I can take care of my family. I can donate money to where I want to donate it and make a difference that way. And just, you know, have a future that I've prepared for to one day do very little, which I don't think will ever happen. I think I'll do what I'm doing until, you know, I get hit by a train or something. I don't know, but I don't think I'll ever just lay down and stop. But, coming from somebody who had two parents of the Depression and the type of things I think that they didn't intentionally instill in me about money let me go to this. This is one of the best gifts that my parents ever gave me. All right. We were dirt ass poor. My dad worked at Sears for 43 years. He never made like over $18,000. And my mother had to start a bridal shop where she was making very little. But my brother and I went to college with no debt. We thought that we were wealthy. I mean, I was probably kind of a jerk about it because I thought I was rich because all the people around us were so stinking poor. And I look at that as the greatest gift my parents ever gave me, not to make me a pretentious jerk, but to make me feel like, you know, I was well off. And I wanted to do that with my kids, except not, except they were well off and I didn't want to turn them into little assholes.
Yeah. I think what you just said carries a lot of weight. You felt well off because you were well off relatively. And that goes back exactly to what we were just talking about with Jack. You know, he's comparing himself to Jack. He's doing really well. That's why I start every day with a wheel of gratitude. You know, what are all the things I'm grateful for in my life?
I love that. I love that. And I've tried to share a lot of that stuff with him. You know, and he's going through a tough time right now because he hates his job, but he's making a lot of money. But then the people around him are making so much more. Again, it's the reverse of what, you know, I went through as a kid. I thought I was wealthy and I wasn't. He thinks he's not wealthy and he really is.
Yeah.
But, you know, that time of life, that was a tough time of life for me. And I always told my kids, I said, the 20s are hard. You know, you come out of college and you're thrown out into the world. You have no idea what you're going to do. And everyone is asking you, well, what are you going to do now? And that used to drive Jack up the wall. I said, well, you know, you got to have some kind of answer for them because they're going to ask. But your 20s is going to suck. Your 30s, it gets really good. So just enjoy your 20s the best you can. But, and his 20s are a lot better than mine were. Mine were pretty rough.
That's probably one of the things I've noticed most in my travels, you know, and certainly when I lived in Costa Rica for that little bit. But, you know, just the relative happiness, you know, we really do have all the things we need to have a pretty great life. And you don't have to have $10 million in the bank. And what I hear in Jack is just a values misalignment, you know, and it's one of those things that you can't think about what you just said. He's in a job he hates, but he's making a lot of money and he thinks, but the other guys are making even more money. But it sounds to me like money's not the problem. So, and I have that qualifier when I take on a new client where they have to be, you know, quite profitable. I mean, I'm talking $10,000, $20,000 a month profit as an entrepreneur before I'll consider working with them. And I tell people that the number that could be $1,000 a month, but you have to understand that more money is not going to solve the problem. Yes. Because if you're miserable at 10 bucks, you're going to be miserable at 100 bucks. You're going to be miserable at 10,000 bucks.
Yeah. Now you're quoting your book, I think. I've read your book.
You know, so
And I think that's why I think your book is a valuable thing. I gave it out to a bunch of kids at App State for the construction management program. I think it's a great, should be required reading for some of these kids. It's an easy read. It's got some very, very simple things to do in it. And when my kids come home, I'm going to make them go home with a copy and read it as well. I think it's valuable information. I wish I'd have had it at their age. You know, at my age, it's not, I think it's better for me to use it as a guidebook for them to kind of give them some advice. But yeah, it's very valuable information. I hope it helps a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, and that's who I wrote it for. I mean, I wrote it because it's what I wish I had. You know, it's the reason I'm a coach for other entrepreneurs, because it's what I wish I had.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and so I'm fortunate that I'm able to do that. And I think kind of similar to your business, you know, because I sold the last business and bought myself a lot of runway, I'm able to build it the way I want to build it, you know, but that was always the goal. Right. So interesting. So buddy, if you had to give somebody one piece of advice, there doesn't matter where they're at on the journey, you know, I would consider you you're in that business Buddha territory, you know, where, you know, you don't question what you're doing, you know, you're doing the right thing. And there's a lot of people that wish they were in your position. You know, what one piece of advice would you give them, other than read my book? Of course.
Second piece of advice is if you feel like you're doing the right thing, then you most likely are. It's tempting to do things for maximum profit. But if you always know in your heart that you're doing the right thing by your customers, by the people that you work with, by your family, by everybody, if you know in your heart, and you got to ask yourself that you're doing the right thing, you probably are. I don't know. There's a lot of things that can pull you in other directions. I mean, you know, you got the angel here, the devil here. He's pulling you over and saying, hey, you could probably make an extra 10% if you did, you know. But if you always do the right thing, you're going to sleep good at night. The money will be there, I promise you, especially when you're starting out. You be the guy that does what he says. And that's that. Honestly, I guess if I could page one of my book, say what you're going to do and do what you say. That's all it really takes. I mean, you can be very successful in a lot of different things because there's so many people that just BS around that. But if you do what you say you're going to do, even if it's not profitable, success will follow that.
Love it. I think we can stop right there, my friend.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today on the Million Dollar Flip Flop Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you listen on. If this episode make you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them. Or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. If you want to see more behind the scenes with Roderick and his guests, be sure to find them on Instagram. It's also where we can have deeper conversations on these episodes. Go to www.instagram.com/milliondollarflipflops. Until next time.